Hello there and welcome. Today is Wednesday, February 13th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Mexican drug kingpin El Chapo Guzman has been convicted in U.S. court.
El Chapo was the man behind the curtains. He pulled all the strings. He directed all of the production, the smuggling, the transportation, distribution of billions upon billions of dollars worth of narcotics into the United States.
U.S. lawmakers reach a tentative deal to keep the government open, but will the president sign it? Tens of thousands of protesters in Venezuela take to the streets demanding aid be allowed in. And a powerful film exposing the aftermath of sex abuse at the hands of French priests. It's all on today's International Edition. And we begin with President Donald Trump saying on Tuesday that he is not pleased with the agreement lawmakers reached for limited new barrier construction along the U.S.-Mexico border, but that he does not foresee another partial government shutdown over the dispute.
I can't say I'm happy. I can't say I'm thrilled. But the wall's getting built. Regardless, doesn't matter, because we're doing other things beyond what we're talking about here. So we'll see what happens. We're having a meeting on it later. It's really obstruction. The Democrats want everybody to be able to come into our country.
President Trump now, lawmakers wait for his response. They're cautiously optimistic that the president will sign the bipartisan deal to boost border security and keep the federal government open ahead of Friday's funding deadline. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has that part of the story.
House and Senate appropriators are still hammering out details of the agreement, but Democrats like Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen are expressing relief.
It looks like we're finalizing an agreement here, which clearly would be good news, keeping the government open.
The deal reportedly contains a fraction of the funds President Donald Trump sought for wall construction and would be used to build fencing of the type that already exists along the U.S.-Mexico border. The agreement also reportedly reduces the number of beds U.S. immigration agents have for detained undocumented immigrants. Both elements irk South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham.
I don't see how you get virtually the same amount of wall money you had and reduce bed space. I don't see how that's a good deal.
But the Senate's Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky had a different take, noting that in the end, Democrats are agreeing to some form of new border barriers.
I look forward to reviewing the full text as soon as possible and hope the Senate can act on this legislation in short order.
Congress has until Friday to keep the federal government funded and avert another partial shutdown. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, a New York Democrat, noted that President Trump plays a key role.
I strongly urge the president to sign this agreement. No one gets everything they want in these agreements. The president must sign it and not cause another shutdown.
A five-week shutdown ended last month when Congress passed a three-week spending bill designed to give negotiators a window to craft a border security package that now appears to have taken shape. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Mexican drug kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman has been convicted of drug trafficking and related charges at a trial in New York. The end of the three-month trial marks the end of Guzman's rule of the Sinaloa cartel, which prosecutors described as the world's largest and most prolific drug trafficking organization. Ray Donovan, the DEA special agent who led the 22-agency effort to Guzman's capture, spoke to reporters after the verdict was read.
Throughout the past 12 weeks, the American public and the world had a backstage pass to the rise and fall of the leader, the most notorious, infamous, and dangerous drug cartel in history. Prior to the trial, El Chapo was a household name synonymous with wealth, power, fortune and fame. However, throughout the trial and in many, many chilling witness testimonies, the American public and the world was introduced to the real El Chapo, a ruthless killer, a violent drug trafficker, arms trafficker, money launderer, and manipulator.
The 61-year-old will likely be sent to a U.S. maximum security prison to prevent another escape. Guzman broke out of Mexican prisons twice before he was recaptured and extradited to the U.S. in 2017. His attorney, Jeffrey Lichtman, says Guzman was targeted as a fall guy by another Sinaloan drug kingpin who remains at large, and he says they plan to appeal.
This was not a case where we had a defendant presumed innocent. He was presumed guilty. I don't blame you guys because you got to do what you got to do. But it's very, very difficult to get a fair trial in America when the press is so overwhelmingly negative. And look, I understand, you know, there were escapes that were dramatic, and that was all part of the lure of Joaquin Guzman. But at the end of the day, a lot of this contributed to a myth of what El Chapo is. El Chapo is not necessarily Joaquin Guzman, but that's for another day.
Prosecutors put more than 50 witnesses on the stand to explain how the cartel made billions of dollars importing tons of cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, and marijuana into the U.S. Witnesses described killings and bribes and detailed how drugs were transported using tanker trucks, trains, and even shipments of canned peppers. Prosecutors portrayed Guzman as an overseer of brutality across national borders. The jury convicted him Tuesday after 6 days of deliberations, and they convicted him on all 10 counts, and he now faces the possibility of spending the rest of his life in prison. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The Afghan government has fired its election commission. The BBC demands a White House security review after a cameraman was attacked at a Trump rally. President Trump is not happy with the border barrier deal lawmakers have crafted. And Secretary of State Pompeo warns Central European allies over Russia and China ties. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Signs that the U.S. and China might reach an agreement in trade talks and news of a tentative deal to avoid the government shutdown in Washington helped push world stock markets and bond yields higher Tuesday. U.S. and Chinese officials expressed hopes that a new round of talks, which began in Beijing Monday, would bring them closer to easing their nearly year-long trade war. Beijing and Washington are trying to hammer out a deal before March 1st. That's the deadline when U.S. tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports are scheduled to increase to 25% from 10%. VOA Asia's Ira Melman discusses the level of progress with Craig Allen, president of the U.S.-China Business Council.
I think that the news out of Beijing is mixed, that there has been progress on intellectual property rights. There's been progress on market access. It's less clear that there has been progress on the structural issues, such as industrial policy, state-owned enterprises. And so we're hopeful that Ambassador Lighthizer and the team will keep focused on these longer-term and more difficult issues, in addition to making progress on intellectual property as well as market access.
I have read that you and your organization takes a positive view as far as movement on IT, but not so much on tariffs.
Well, we are against the imposition of tariffs indeed, because tariffs are a tax on the American people, and the money that has gone into the Treasury since the imposition of tariffs have all come from importers. However, we do believe that the president, by using tariffs, has successfully gotten the attention of the Chinese and that progress is being made. And we just want to ensure that after having gone through so much difficulty and so many negotiations and so much turmoil, that we come out with good results from this round of negotiations. And good results would mean addressing some of the structural barriers that keep out foreign companies from the Chinese market.
What do you feel the possibility of attaining that goal are?
I think that it is probably a matter of gradations. So as I noted, it looks like good progress on market access. It looks like good progress on intellectual property rights. It looks like good progress on the purchases of commodities. When we get to industrial policy, we believe that Ambassador Lighthizer and his team will make a good progress. But this becomes difficult when we're talking about cyber, for example. And by what means can the administration address China's use of cyber or the internet to obtain industrial secrets? So we would like for the administration to focus on that. We would like the administration to focus on state-owned enterprises. There are great swaths of the Chinese economy, be it energy or finance or construction or steel or media or telecom, that are totally controlled by Chinese state-owned enterprises in the state. And they need to be opened up. And that is a more difficult prospect that Ambassador Lighthizer is wrestling with right now. We hope to see substantial progress in these areas.
Where is there room, as far as you are concerned, for the U.S. to negotiate its current stance with China?
Well, I think that we have more leverage now than we've ever had before, and have to give President Trump great credit for creating that leverage. Further, in addition to the trade talks, it's important to note that both the Chinese economy and the U.S. economy are showing some signs of weakness. The indicators on the Chinese side are quite negative, particularly when viewed from the prism of private sector enterprises. And so this is a good time to try and address these issues in a fulsome manner. So these next couple of days in Beijing will be very important, and we're hopeful that the American team will be able to bring home real change for state-owned enterprises, real change in China's industrial policies, and a commitment by the Chinese not to use cyber or espionage for commercial good.
That's Craig Allen, president of the U.S.-China Business Council. Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido told a huge rally of supporters Tuesday that humanitarian aid would enter the country February 23rd, setting the stage for a showdown with President Nicolas Maduro, who has refused to let supplies in. Tens of thousands of protesters took to the streets to demand Maduro allow the aid in to Venezuela, where food and medicine shortages are rife. Guaido invoked a constitutional provision to assume the presidency 3 weeks ago, arguing that Maduro's re-election last year was a sham. Most Western countries, including the United States, have recognized Guaido as Venezuela's legitimate head of state. But Maduro retains the backing of Russia and China, as well as control of state institutions, including the military. An aid convoy supplied by the United States and Colombia arrived in the Colombian border town of Cucuta last week, where it's being held in warehouses. Maduro has denounced the aid as a U.S.-orchestrated show to overthrow his socialist government and said it will not be let into his country. He has demanded instead that Washington lift economic sanctions that it ratcheted up weeks ago. A priest accused of molesting more than 80 boys is trying to block the release of a film about a scandal which has rocked the French Catholic Church. By the Grace of God centers on a fervent Catholic who discovers at the age of 40 that a priest who abused him is still alive and has access to children through the church. The film then follows a group of young men trying to get French prosecutors to open an investigation into sexual abuse by Lyon-based priest Bernard Prenot. He's asking the court to demand the film not be shown until after his trial, which is due to start later this year. The court is expected to make its decision this Friday on whether to block or even delay its release. But in a challenge to that decision, the film was shown in a pre-premiere in Lyon earlier this week with the director and cast on hand to answer audience questions. I spoke with Paris-based reporter Catherine Field about how the film was received.
A lot of members of the audience were real solid members, you know, longtime members of the Catholic Church in Lyon. A lot of them were shocked. A lot of them came out of the cinema saying that they really hadn't realized that it was quite as widespread, these allegations of child sexual abuse by members of the clergy. They also, some of them said they hadn't quite understood how much effort or how much despair even these men had gone through to bring the case to the public. I mean, let's remember that this film is all about the story of three adult men who speak out about boyhood sexual abuse they experience at the hands of a particular priest. And the story is how they felt when they were in their middle age and they discovered the priest who they say abused them had been returned to Lyon and was working with pre-teenage boys at the church. So it is really a story that just touches people and touched most of the audience because they hadn't realized the extent of the abuse and the extent of the courage that these three adult men had to bring this case to the public and to the prosecution service.
Why this particular case of alleged sexual abuse of children by members of the clergy? Why has this particular case attracted so much attention?
Because the man accused of covering up for the priest is the Cardinal of Lyon, who is the highest Catholic Church official in France. He really is the most senior official in the Catholic Church here. He is actually on trial at the moment, awaiting the verdict of having covered up the abuse, of not having gone to the authorities. So it's not just the case of the priest who's alleged to have sexually abused as many as 80 victims in the 1970s and 1980s, but also the fact that the cardinal, the highest level French church official, had covered up the abuse or had not gone to the authorities about it.
Well, with so many cases of clergy being accused, tried, and jailed for sexual abuse of minors, what has the French state done with some of these other cases in general?
Well, there are already 10 priests who have served prison sentences. Two bishops have already been imprisoned for having failed to report crimes. The French state is actually at the moment in the upper house of parliament has set up a commission of inquiry to have a look at what can be done, what laws can be put in place that will help protect minors. And in fact, this week, the upper house of parliament will be hearing from representatives from the Catholic Church, the Protestant Church, and Muslim faith as to what more can be done. It certainly has been seen as a first step. Just as much it's been seen a first step that the French bishops' conference has said that they too will investigate and try to shed light on sexual abuse of minors, which they say dates back to the 1950s. You know, all these commissions, some of them very ambitious, have been set up, but still it's felt that not enough is being done to actually deal with rehabilitating or reaching out to some of these victims, who are now, many of them in their 40s and 50s, who've carried the burden of having been sexually abused and not having been able to speak to anyone, let alone being able to have had a day in court to see that their accuser goes before a judge.
All right, Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia, right here on The Voice of America.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts, Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. VOAnews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. While people are working out at their gym, dogs are getting their own exercise at a sports club just for canines in the U.S. While unconventional, the gym offers pet parents a place where their pup can stay fit and have fun at the same time. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to Frolic Dogs in Alexandria, Virginia, which is among the canine sports clubs that have been popping up across the United States.
This 5-year-old Visla named Stella is a regular at Frolic Dogs, a canine sports club in Alexandria, Virginia.
She's so active, and so I see how happy she is when we're at the gym and she's playing and she's able to, you know, jump through the hoop or go up on the balance beam, and she's very proud of herself, which of course then makes me happy.
Dog lovers Kim Gilliam and her husband opened the first canine gym in the Washington, D.C. area 4 years ago.
We definitely got some eye rolls and some scratching heads when we told them, we were opening a dog gym. But once you come in and you really see how people are working with their dogs, bonding with their dogs, and also getting them that exercise that they so badly need, it really does make sense.
This pudgy dog named Ziggy was brought to the sports club for the first time to get a workout.
He tried. He did.
It is the new year, so I think everybody's getting in the gym and just trying to, you know, lose some extra pounds.
Like a human sports club, the dog owners can pay a fee each time they come or get a monthly membership. Besides keeping fit, the workout also helps keep the dog stimulated and reinforces good behavior.
Good boy. Love seeing him jump around and play with the other dogs here and see what all the other dogs can do, so then we can learn from that.
The gym also helped Poodle Mix Scooter, who was found as a stray living on the streets.
When I first got him, he spent the first year of agility class hiding under chairs. He was terrified of everything. We worked with him, and he is now a pretty outgoing little guy.
Good boy.
This 5-year-old German Shepherd is staying fit after taking part in hundreds of local agility competitions.
He takes first place a lot of times. Quite often he beats dogs that are well above him in the levels.
Gilliam says the pet parents get a workout too by running around with their pup.
I've had some folks tell me they're just as tired as their dog when they leave.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
Well, totalitarian regimes and their mark on the human psyche, nostalgic depictions of life in Mexico City, riddled with socioeconomic and racial divisions, and the toll of poverty and war on children and families are themes of this year's Oscar nominees in the category of Best Foreign Language Film. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
Nur der Künstler kann den Menschen nach dieser Katastrophe das Gespür für ihre Freiheit zurückgeben. Indem ihr euch frei macht, macht ihr die Welt frei.
The epic drama Never Look Away focuses on the personal journey of Kurt, a young artist from East Germany who tries to find meaning through art after experiencing the murder of family members and the destruction of his country during the Nazi regime and political oppression under communism.
Glaub mir, es stimmt alles nicht, was ich da gemalt habe.
Academy Award-winning filmmaker Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck says dictatorships first try and control art.
Because it can truly change minds, it can change hearts. But the problem is, as soon as a dictatorship gets its hands on the art, it's no longer art.
The filmmaker, who taps into his personal experiences and his family history for this story, shows how the main character's self-exile to the capitalist West was also tough.
The sudden freedom is something very scary. It's very messy. You feel like at least there was a certain kind of solidarity or someone who was supposed to look after you. But I'll take the chaos and the despair of freedom any day over the death that is slavery.
Pavel Pavlikovsky's Oscar-nominated film Cold War echoes von Donnersmarck's message about how totalitarianism imprisons the human psyche. The film takes place in communist Poland, Like Kurt in Never Look Away, the main characters of Cold War, musicians Zula and Victor, are stifled by the communist regime. They too flee to Western Europe in 1960s. Cold War also shows the alienation and identity crisis Eastern European exiles often felt in the West. Critics consider Roma the frontrunner of the group, with 10 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture. Alfonso Cuarón's film is a nostalgic depiction of 1970s daily life in Mexico City, inspired by personal memories of middle-class life and racial and class divisions. In order to make the story as authentic as possible, Cuarón used people who had never acted before, including Yalitza Aparicio, who plays the lead character Cleo, a tireless and caring domestic worker. Aparicio has received an Oscar nomination for Best Actress. In an interview with VOA, she credited Cuarón for throwing a light on the indigenous domestic workers in Mexico.
Domestic workers play a very important role at households and are not being recognized. He showed the world that they are human beings, that they have rights, they need to be respected.
The other Oscar contenders in this category are Capernaum and Shoplifters. Set in Lebanon, the main character in Nadine Labaki's Capernaum is a child suing his parents for bringing him into a chaotic, war-torn world. In Shoplifters, director Hirokazu Korida offers a heartbreaking picture of extreme Japanese poverty through a family living on the margins of society. Regardless which film wins the coveted award, all of them show love, freedom, and personal honesty as the antidote to political brutality and social injustice. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And finally, on this day in music history. February 13th, 1971, that was the day the Osmond Brothers' song One Bad Apple began a five-day run at number one on the charts for U.S. singles. It took them more than a decade to get to that milestone, but the group had been performing in venues across the U.S. in concerts and on TV shows starting all the way back in 1962. And you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. I don't care what you write down.
This is VOA News. I'm Tom.